Yes, sir. What day is it? Tuesday, September 3rd. It feels like the season started today, Jake. That's what it really feels like, which I guess makes sense, seeing as the season is in less than a week.
Yeah, I know. It's all messed up, too, because the Tuesday is really a Monday, you know, and Thursday is going to be Wednesday. You know, it's got us all messed up.
Well, I'm excited for Monday Night Football, and I don't think I would have been able to say that on Monday. When, yes, Brandon Ayuk had signed, but Trent Williams had not. And I would like to commend Trent Williams on just staying out of it. Right? Brandon Ayuk got everything he wanted, and I appreciated Brandon Ayuk admitting today with a smile on his face that, like, hey, you know, squeaky wheel sometimes gets the oil. I think that was Eric Branch's phrasing, and I think it was spot on. In the presser today, like, yeah, I had to run a playbook that even I didn't feel comfortable with, but he got everything he wanted. Trent Williams got everything he wanted, and he just sat there and waited for the Niners to give it to him. They both won, and in a weird, twisted way, even for dorks like us who think the salary cap, like, exists to a degree, a little bit, or at least we can talk about it, but, like, the Niners won, man. Like, the Niners, yeah, they gave those guys everything they wanted, but they have Trent Williams probably in time for week one. They have Brandon Ayuk probably in time for week one. And they have a team that, if you just look at the roster, feels very much like the favorites in the NFC, which is, again, not something that I would have said on Monday when Trent Williams looked like he was going to be hanging out in Houston for who knows how long.
Yeah, and I'll just get through the Pearsall thing first, just because it was like, we didn't know, like, I didn't know what to expect. And
with the, guy getting shot in the chest, yeah, that's kind of not ideal.
And as, like, journalists, which I know sometimes sports journalists obloviate and overstate their importance, but, like, you never heard of that? But going,
I know I bloviate. Hopefully I don't overstate my importance, and certainly I undermine that at all times. Right. But you're right. I get where you're going with that.
But going into Tuesday, you know, we don't know exactly what to expect, because, you know, we know the details of what we've heard. We know it's not life threatening, that Ricky Pearsall is going to be, like, okay, but you don't know. He's shot in the chest. What does that mean? What is the locker room going to be like?
Fucking terrible.
It's going to be deeply uncomfortable just to talk to everyone about it. Is the mood going to be down? Like, what, how do we operate? It's a very unique situation for everyone involved. You're trying to be as respectful as you can. I mean, there's as many news people as I've seen all of training camp there. I think that's just the nature of it. Not blaming anyone. It's just the nature.
It's literal front page news. Like,
it's right.
Yeah.
Right.
It transcends sports. This is, and you and I have talked about this on air, off air. I've done a bunch of radio since then. Like, it has been politicized. We're not dealing with that shit. We're not going to do any of that nonsense. Clearly, we have no issue talking a little bit of politics, but nothing's going to be accomplished, because there's just a lot of bad faith actors in that space that aren't actually trying to accomplish anything. And frankly, I don't feel terribly qualified as someone who's lived in the city of San Francisco for 18 months of my life total. I'm an East Bay guy. I mean, I can talk to you about stuff in Oakland. I can talk to you about whatever's going on in my little island town of Alameda. But, like, when you're dealing, especially in the media space, with people who were born here, raised here, who have, you know, stakes in the ground on the 7x7, I don't want to step on any toes in that regard. Right. Those are conversations that I think I'll speak for both of us here. Correct me if I'm wrong. Like, those are conversations that do, in fact, need to be had about public safety and things like that. This is not the venue for that. No. I don't participate in any venue for that, at least professionally. And beyond that, I'm not the vessel. And if you feel comfortable with it, feel free. But, like, I'm not the vessel to be having that conversation or even spark that conversation. And no. I'm sure as shit not getting into an argument with a bunch of bad faith actors when this is a pretty serious, obviously it's an incredibly serious situation that raises very, you know, serious problems. It brings to the forefront issues that we know but don't really think about all that much, or we don't talk about all that much, that we've just sort of let happen. And now it's front and center. NFL star gets shot in a robbery in Union Square. And the fact of the matter is, a lot of us just went, what was he doing in Union Square in the middle of the afternoon on a weekend? It's fucking terrible. That we can say. And John Lynch used the term miraculous. I don't know the details of it. I'm going to take him at his word, because that's a word that a lot of other people have used as well, who do seem to know the details of this. Considering the possibilities when it's laid out as man got shot in chest, he's in the weight room on Monday.
It's something where it was initially reported as he got shot in the chest, then the person, the assailant, got shot in the chest, but it was that he was stable, and you go, how can he be stable if you shot in the chest? And based on what Lynch told us today, it was as positive as you could possibly be talking about someone who got shot in the chest. And the fact that when he was asked, you know, do you think Ricky Pearsall will come back and he will play? And he said, oh, yeah. He's very, very confident.
Even deeper context on that, which is important. Like, John Lynch said that they put him on the 4-week non-football injury list, mostly for the mental aspect of getting shot in the chest, not the physical aspect. Like, dude, I think Tim Ryan went on KMBR this morning and said that Ricky is already getting like crazy rep in the locker room. Again, I can't speak to what actually happened. We weren't there, and we don't have a great idea of what really did happen. We'll eventually get that story, both from police reports and Ricky Pearsall himself and eyewitnesses and things like that. But he's not going to beat the Slick Rick allegations anytime soon, man.
Yeah. I'm bringing this up because it's the biggest story in the country, in the entire country, but as far as sports is concerned. And the only reason we can move on and go and talk about Trent Williams and talk about all these contracts and stuff is because Ricky's okay.
Yes.
Like, he's definitively okay. And everyone has been giving clear signs that that is the case, that he's going to play football again this season. And again, Lynch, like you said, was sort of intimating, like, yeah, he's actually like physically, like, we just had to make the decision, like, let's put him on this list, not worry about it. He had the shoulder thing. Let's just give him 4 weeks and deal with it when we deal with it, but he's okay. And so you come in on Tuesday and the locker room's not weird for the most part. Like, it's you know, like, you're a little wary of how to talk, but like, guys are shooting the basketball, vibes are good. Trent Williams is in the building. Like, Brandon Ayuk's in the build. You've got guys in the locker room that Brandon Ayuk has been around, but like, he got paid and now he's practicing for the first time. And Trent,
it's not
Williams
weird with
there.
Him anymore.
Right. And so you get this thing of like, you had the party, which, again, Lynch also mentioned, because it was like a weird look of them partying while Ricky was in the hospital.
I'm glad that Lynch mentioned it, and I'm not sure if that story where it's like Ricky Pearsall's like, no matter what you do, please party without me, is true or not. But it is a logistical nightmare for Kyle Shanahan and the Shanahan family to cancel the party.
I get that. Like, he's probably like, listen, like, don't let me ruin the party. Like, go on.
Yeah.
So Lynch to mention that was smart, because you don't want to be like, so what about this? It's like, whoever has to ask that question, it doesn't have to be asked, but like, I'm glad no one had to ask it and that Lynch got in front of it. Where guys get to celebrate actually like being on the team. They know he's okay. Mm-hmm. And so you've got like actual juice and like, thank God he's okay. Brandon Ayuk's done. And now Trent Williams is done. And so you've got this, like, we go in and it's like positive for like the first time. It like really feels like this team is ready to play football, and we're a week away from the season. You've got everyone back.
Yeah.
Like, Trent just brings such a gravitas, such an energy that's positive that you could really palpably feel.
Yep.
It was like, okay, now football can actually be played. Bizarre as that sounds.
No, I think that that's an extremely accurate representation of the situation. I do think Ayuk has something to do with that, in that, again, the weirdness is now gone with Brandon Ayuk. And I asked him straight up, like, how weird was it where you're holding in? So you're just around every day as all this other stuff is happening. And this is why I like Brandon Ayuk. I mean, I still believe that wide receiver's a bubble. I'm glad for him and his family that he made as much money as he did. And I'm glad that he's here, because I enjoy Brandon Ayuk the person, and I greatly enjoy Brandon Ayuk the football player. And he won. and congratulations to him. It ain't my money. The fuck do I care? But if we're going to actually engage in that topic of conversation, I'm gonna share my opinions on how I would structure a football contract. I mean, it's, take it for what it's worth, which I suppose is very little at this juncture. Regardless, he's a guy who people enjoy being around. He's a low-key dude. He's always a positive guy. I've never had a bad interaction with Brandon Ayuk, even when he doesn't want to talk to us. But there's a difference between him being back and it not being weird there. That's a check mark in the bonus category. Things are going to be better just because of that. I was legitimately stunned, and this is a great example if you don't really know what you got until it's gone. I was legitimately stunned at how the just mere presence, and I think your word for it was tremendous, gravitas, of Trent Williams changes the entire temperament of a team, and it changed my temperament as it related to this team. And that's obvious, right? I think it would do it for the fan base too. Like, Trent Williams is here. If Trent Williams wasn't here, this team can't win a Super Bowl. What the fuck are we doing then? What's the point?
Right.
But now that he is here, even if week one doesn't look great or whatever, you go, well, we got Trent Williams. And Trent Williams might be the best player in the NFL. And we got a bunch of other guys who were like in the running for being best player in the NFL. When Deebo Samuel's at the top of his game, I don't want very many players more than him. When Christian McCaffrey's at the top of his game, he's up there. I mean, even George Kittle, get him in the conversation. When you talk all-around players, Brock Purdy is as good a quarterback in the league when he's at the top of his game. But all of those things, Fred Warner as well, Nick Bosa as well. But on the offensive side, those things are only true if Trent Williams is there. And I kind of dug a little bit deeper into it. I think there's a just unspoken part of the psyche where you are playing a combat sport. You are, you know, these guys say they're going into battle. If you guys have ever been on the sidelines and see how hard they hit, it is the closest thing to war. I'm lucky that I've never had to experience war close up. I wouldn't make it because it's hard enough to watch football played at full speed close up and not feel it in your soul, feel it in your bones a little bit. I frankly, for some of these guys, and you mention it all the time, some of these guys who are your size, you know, how they get hit the way they get hit and still function as a human being is superhuman and frankly, ununderstandable. And so when you're going out into this just war of attrition, this battle every day, when you think about, like, you know, Game of Thrones or other fantasy stuff, I'm not into the fantasy space. My wife reads that shit, but, like, you know, they kind of, you've seen the movies, right? They lead with a giant. They put the giant out on the front line. We're going to put our giant against your giant. You have to feel so much more comfortable going into just war. And again, I hate to use that, but as close to war as you get, battle.
No, but they're like, the sound it makes when someone runs full speed and gets hit is it's so goddamn loud.
It will mess you up. But having Trent Williams lead the line emotionally has to be so comforting when you engage in that line of work 17, 20 times a year. And if you're going into a season without that, it's got to be a little bit unsettling knowing that you don't have the alpha of alphas. And oh, by the way, in the locker room, Trent Williams, the alpha of alphas, you think I mentioned all those great players. The 49ers do not lack leadership in any stretch of the match. Fred Warner is an incredible leader. Nick Bosa, for as interesting a cat as he is sometimes, is an excellent leader. He's not a rah-rah guy, but he's an excellent leader. And Kyle forces him to go up there and talk, and he gets the guys riled up. He gets them ready to go. And he's a very intellectual football player. Brock Purdy, everyone loves Brock Purdy. He's not just some ho-hum guy. Let's do it. Like, he'll bark at your ass. He's a leader. Deebo Samuel is the guy standing next to Trent. You want to talk about a leader? Deebo Samuel is a leader for the same sort of energy and vibe that Trent brings on the football field. But Trent in the locker room as well, he's this big teddy bear. And if you want to go take an idea to him or just talk through something with him, because he's been through it all, he's seen it all, business side, personal side, and certainly the football side. And you just don't want to go to a coach yet because you don't want to embarrass. You go to Trent.
Right.
And Trent will talk to you about it for a long time. Trent has had time for any human that he's ever interacted with, including us idiots. And he always has a smile on his face. And it's like,
it's
alpha
it's a thing of
all
like,
alphas.
Yeah, sometimes you get what is it? Sort of big shotted. I'm missing the word for it. Big time. You get big time sometimes. Not by Trent. I'm saying other people. You get big time and then you go, "Well, Trent's like a Hall of Famer. Come on. You can give me like, 30 seconds on the side." And but so like
I just don't think because it was they were held in this limbo, this purgatory, because they go, well, they didn't exist. They signed Brandon Parker, like that ain't gonna fix it. Like they have two tackles,
right?
Like they obviously Trent can come back, but he wasn't coming back, and so you're just held in the state of, well, do we move on from Trent? Because that's a massive undertaking for a team when that's who they've looked to time and time again for leadership, both emotional. Physical.
Yeah.
I mean, physical. You saw what happened in that Browns scrap. And just as a man, that's who everyone looks to. That's who Kyle Shanahan looks to. Everyone looks to Trent Williams as the best of the best, the greatest of the great, and the leader of this team. And it's not to say they don't have other leaders. It's just to say those other leaders didn't know if they needed to step up into that role because that's Trent's role. Yeah. And I, because we weren't in the locker room, and probably because I wasn't putting two and two together, like I hadn't taken all of that into account until I see Trent there and I just go, there's a lightness to the room. Something's changed and this 49ers team feels complete and it feels like it can actualize now for the first time this season. And that I'm not a big vibes guy. I mean, I can certainly point to, hey, vibes aren't good, whatever, but like I don't read into that stuff that much. And I certainly don't feel it the way that other people typically feel it because you can be easily fooled by it. Maybe I got fooled. I was talking to a couple people about it. I think you agree with me. The vibes today changed dramatically because Brandon's here, because the Pearsall thing, as terrible as it inherently was, couldn't have gone better. You don't want it to happen, but if it was going to happen, this is the best case scenario.
Just the relief. Just the fact that, like, not only is he okay, but like his career's not in danger. He's going to come back. Like, best possible scenario for the worst possible scenario. And to go to Trent.
And then
to go to Trent and to connect those two things, like one of the most, I think, interesting things Trent said today was, I think Larry asked him about him and Ricky getting shot. And he had a story basically of how he said he was at OTAs for literally 30 minutes.
That's
because
right.
he wasn't
he,
there.
He was.
He literally was there for 30 minutes. And he said, there's like 90 guys on the team. I don't know all these guys, but he said Ricky came up to him and he got like a vibe that, okay, this guy's very genuine and just a sense of like him as a person. And so he said that, part of the reason he came back before the contract was actually done.
Yeah.
As he said, I felt more compelled to come back after that. He's like, I've never experienced anything like that. Have a teammate get shot. So in my mind, he's like, man, I just want to get back, get around the team. As soon as I saw that happen, I'm like, I just got to get back. I just want to be a voice in his ear. Let him know everything's going to be all right. Be there for the team. And like, short, whatever, like leadership quotes, you can be like, yeah, he's overstating that, whatever. Like Trent's a very genuine person.
Yeah. Trent
doesn't
bullshit.
Children. Like that's like legitimate leadership of being like, the contract is almost done, whatever. I need to be there.
Yeah.
To make sure like we're going into the season. We're a group. I'm committed to this. Like that matters. But then what you talked about, like you really just his smile like beams off the wall. Like you really
listen
get a sense
to us.
Of,
we're just giddy like schoolgirls.
I'm just saying, like he's one of the greatest offensive linemen in the history of the sport. Mm-hmm. And when you get him back, and it's not just that he's a great offensive lineman, it's that he's the guy with Debo, as we talked about. He comes out of the tunnel, and you can argue whether like that stuff matters. Very clearly, it does.
It matters a lot.
It sets the tone. And when you see him in the run game demolish someone, that is what the 49ers MO wants to be. And if you don't have the person who is literally setting that tone, you don't have it.
I completely underestimated, and I'll never do this again. I underestimated the level of leadership, one, that he provided. And I knew it. I knew all these things, but I hadn't contextualized it well. And two, how important that is to a team. He was effectively today like a double dose of Advil for a team that has this terrible Super Bowl hangover, right? Because I know people want to say, oh, we're not actually hungover. Every single action that had taken place between the end of the Super Bowl, and yesterday just reeked Super Bowl hangover. And I think all the time about the Jason Kelce quote from last year going into that game against the 49ers, which is we were 10-1 and everyone was miserable because we lost the Super Bowl last year. And you think about all the quotes that we've heard from people who are like, you know, it's so hard to get there. It's so difficult to get there. And to have to play an entire season with one singular, I mean, obviously every team's trying to win the Super Bowl, but right, nothing else brings joy except if you win the Super Bowl. Everything is about revenge. There
what
is
Kyle talks about the entire time. He's like, you got so 31 tough. Miserable teams.
31 miserable teams, but they'd be miserable the whole way there because it's not the Super Bowl yet, because they haven't avenged yet. And there's not really anything to celebrate because they've now set the standard in a way too high. And again, I can't, it should be that high. But when you have shitty practices, just call it what they were, shitty practices, just a string of nasty health, a lot of question marks, the Ayuk situation, which at least he's self-aware. I mean, I never expected him not to be. I figured that was going to be the case.
I did appreciate that.
I really, this is why I like Brandon. This is why it was so frustrating watching him be someone that he's not for as long as he was. And I'm excited to get him back. And I know it has nothing to do with me, but in my, you know, 0.00001% life interactions with Brandon Ayuk, it's important. It's important to know that I wasn't completely gaslit for multiple years on the real personality of Brandon Ayuk. When you have that, and when you have the Trent thing, again, just coming back to it, not knowing if you're going to have your true leader there, not knowing if you're going to have your best player, the recalibration that would have been necessary had Trent not shown up, had he continued to stand on these principles, as he was very wont to do, and said, unless you pay me, I'm not coming. And the 49ers go, we're not going to pay you because we don't trust you long term. Had that continued all the way, I'm not sure where this team would be, because the word is perfect. The relief that everyone was feeling was palpable. And the question now is, do they have enough time? Can they get this thing rolling fast enough so that Monday night doesn't look like a goddamn disaster? Even if it is a disaster, like we'll go over it. We're not going to, but it's not a singular indictment on the team. They'll have to kick Minnesota's ass, and they'll have to kick the Rams' ass if they're not ready for Monday Night Football. But if they went into Monday Night Football without Ayuk or without Williams or without both, and they lost, I shudder to think about what I would have said, much less some others.
Yeah, and you mentioned like they would have to do a recalibration. I don't think you can recalibrate if you don't have Trent.
Fact that they hadn't already started that process, right? They were just waiting to see. I think tells you everything. And at some point they will have to do it.
Yeah.
At some point they will have to do it. But now that appears to be very far down the line.
Trent himself is like, listen, I'm older. He was very blunt. He's like, I'm older. I want security. You know, like this league is volatile.
And it comes back to this. I mean, we've tried to make it simple, or as simple as possible, throughout the process of explaining what Trent wanted, because I thought it was pretty straightforward. Trent wanted the guaranteed money because there was no guaranteed money left on his contract. And by the way, this is the same thing Christian McCaffrey wanted. This is the same thing Brandon Ayuk wanted. This is everybody looking down the line at a 49ers team that was already about $40 million over the salary cap for 2025 before any of those guys signed deals, and saying, well, Brock's about to get paid. The money is gone. So it's a question of, do I want to be somebody who is easily cut, or do I want to be somebody who is now in it for the long haul? So if I'm going to get my money, I got to get it now. It doesn't take, if you and I can figure it out, you can bet your ass that these agents are all over it. They're thinking 26, 27. So Trent Williams is looking at it. He had no guaranteed money left. No guaranteed money left. And you might say, he's Trent Williams. How could they cut him? They're going to have to cut some good players, in all likelihood.
Yeah. Well, do we want to get into the fact that they restructured Debo's deal? I thought that was pretty interesting, because They restructured Debo and they restructured Malik Collins. Malik Collins had like $10 million scheduled for next year. None of it was guaranteed.
Right.
A little bit of it is guaranteed, where it's like, I don't think that's really going to move the needle. I think they can still push it, but they dropped his cap hit by like $5 million and added a little bit of void years, all that good stuff. Where next year, if they cut him, instead of saving $10 million, they save like $5 million. But Debo's interesting because it was reported to be about $16 million. And Debo next year was pretty cuttable, pretty tradable. And yeah. Now it's a situation where I don't know. Is that the route they go? So Debo had basically 1 year left. Debo had 1 year left. And if they cut him, they would have saved $9 million. This is a cut or trade. They would have saved $9 million before June 1st. If they did it after June 1st, they would have saved about 17 and a half, right? Mm-hmm. Now that they restructured his deal, where he's got like a $21 million base salary, and they took about $16 million of that, and they're going to spread it out over the next 3 years into guaranteed money, which means, you know, if you cut Debo, you're looking at a pretty big dead cap hit next season where it's not quite worth it. So it's a situation now where Debo might be on this roster next year, where it was very much looking like if they hadn't done that, I thought that was it. And that's not to say that's guaranteed, but it is setting up a situation where there's like going to be a substantial dead cap hit next season mm-hmm. for Debo Samuel. And before they did that restructure, they wouldn't have had to face that. So that's an interesting scenario. It's like, I think it adds like 5.5 dead cap. And then if you cut him, all of that money comes due. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I'm not looking at the OTC doesn't have it updated yet, to my understanding. No. There is a way that they can just fix it. There is a way where it doesn't hinder them seriously in terms of cutting them and things like that. It's all going to be a post June 1. And so the only thing to note with that, and you know what, we're going to deal with post June 1 shit way down the line. The only thing to note is that you cannot trade somebody with a post June 1 designation. Okay. You can use two post June 1 designations to cut players. And that allows you to cut them at the beginning of the offseason, but they don't come off the books.
Right. That's what they did with
Armstead.
Yeah.
So I'm not, until I see the details, I can't say that he'll definitely be traded. I can't say that he'll definitely be, until we see the details, we don't. It is interesting though, that they decided to move around some of Debo Samuel's money, given
it's
other possibilities.
It sets up a possibility of a shorter extension.
Yep.
If he has a good season. And or I don't know, NFL sign and trades, but there's some funkiness that it's hard because all that money that you just have to eat it when you trade someone, but you can sometimes rework that.
Yeah, I until I see the details, I'm not going to make a broad statement, because listen, it was already going to be a pretty nice chunk of change. So at a certain point, gives a fuck.
It's interesting that, you know, they're just taking all that money and moving it around because they already had an insane amount of cap space.
Well,
so they're like $50 million.
You know, they live in California. They're very big on paying taxes, and they want to pay the 50% tax to roll over salary cap space. This is a fundamental part of John Lynch and Parag Marath's plan for how they're going to pay everybody in perpetuity. Jake, I would like to say, when we first started talking in a professional capacity, we used to say, why are the 49ers so cap compliant all the goddamn time?
Yep.
And when we say they were cap compliant, it's laughable now. They used to be so buttoned up to the point where they thought it was a true hard cap. They didn't roll money over. They didn't do it. They spent the money that they had. They were good boys and girls. And they were budgeted to a T. At some point in the past 3 or 4 years, they have decided to go full New Orleans Saints. And I'm telling you right now, a reckoning is coming, but maybe not. I don't know.
Because
how they realized how the cap is fake, and they're just like, we're going to push the boundaries on this thing.
Yeah, because if you just keep rolling that money over, and then you just keep restructuring, like, you do eat that money over time, but the cap keeps going up. And if you just keep restructuring deeper and deeper into the future,
yeah,
sure, the bill will come due, but it might not be your problem.
I think, like, yeah, I think Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch are very much of the Kyle school of thought of, we might not even be alive. Maybe I'll die.
Is a distinction. This is an important distinction. Yeah, the 49ers are doing it on the best players in the NFL.
Well, you know, the Saints could make the argument that at a time they were doing it as well with Drew Brees and Michael Thomas, right, and Cam. What's his name? Jesus. It's late. Whatever. Who's their really good Cam?
Not anymore. My brain can only come up with Cam Hayward.
Cam Hayward got an extension today. Good for Cam Hayward.
I'm just thinking of Orlando Pace.
Well, as we like to do. Okay. Let's go through some questions here. They got a couple of days here. I am concerned. I think we should all be concerned that you're not going to get 100% of the snaps from Ayuk. Now you don't have Pearsall as somebody to mix in there.
Right.
And of course, you know, Trent, I'll give him 100% of the snaps, but that might not be 100% of Trent Williams. We're going to find out just what he was doing in Houston pretty fast.
And then it's a shorter week after that.
Yeah. Luckily, again, the 49ers, in a way, maybe they've just looked at this schedule and they've said, this is the soft part. And Kyle Shanahan, who is time and time again treated September like the preseason, maybe these guys are just going to ease on into it. And maybe they can get away with it, too. Who's to say? Let's go to Alex. Is there any other week one matchup where the vibes are diametrically as opposed as they are for 49ers Jets? It's a good question. How about Raiders Chargers?
Oof.
No, like, think about it. Like, are there any good things happening with the Las Vegas Raiders right now? Does anyone feel good about that situation?
The Chargers might suck, but their vibes are incredible.
Yeah.
Because Harbaugh is just a lunatic.
They got a 300-pound fullback. They're going to ride out there with just a glorious running back and offensive line core, wide receivers that you've never heard. I hope you get Josh Palmer in fantasy because he's their number one wide receiver, a defense that who knows Justin Herbert, but they're going to be fun.
Can we week one? Do we want to just like look at some of these matchups and just like,
yeah, let's go through them. That's a great idea. Okay.
Let's let it rip.
Ravens Chiefs Thursday night. I don't have the line here. Let me pull up the line. Give me some thoughts on Ravens Chiefs while I pull up line.
Ravens Chiefs. So it's in Kansas City.
Yep.
I think, you know, honestly, I without Mike McDonald, I'm a little worried about the Ravens,
yeah,
but at the same time, I feel like the Ravens are a team that might like really show up for a week one game, you know, in a way where it's like, oh, are the Ravens like actually going to do it? And then later in the year, they do the thing they always do where, you know, like Lamar, you go from thinking he's like MVP to, oh, you just are going to collapse fundamentally. So just again, I know we said like, maybe we're going to do the vibes. Maybe we're not. Vibe wise on this game, I kind of like the Ravens, even though it's in Kansas City. I'm not saying that's a smart choice. I'm just saying galaxy brain, after I said I don't like it with Mike McDonald, I just feel like that's a game the Ravens might show up for.
I think the Ravens show up. The question is if Lamar Jackson wants to do whatever the fuck he did in that playoff game where he's like, hey, you guys think that I can just run it, watch me pass it. And you're like, no, you need to run a little bit, buddy. Like, why are you back there pretending you're Joe Flacco? That ain't your game. Like, no one's questioning your brilliance. Run around throw it all you want, but run around a little. He's just standing in the pocket like Brian Hoyer, playing like Brian Hoyer. It was egregious. And you're right. I do think that there's something to be said for the Ravens wanting to prove a point, but I feel like Kansas City They're playing with such house money right now. Patrick Mahomes is like going to regress to the mean, and that means positively. Like last year, Patrick Mahomes kind of sucked. You, because you're a sicko who's now rewatched the Super Bowl about 10 times, and you text me every time you do it. You sent me a text a couple days ago where you're like, I'm rewatching the Super Bowl. This is embarrassing that the Chiefs won. Had nothing to do with the 49ers. It's just embarrassing that the Kansas City Chiefs, who's like Steve Spagnuolo and the power of friendship on defense, and then an offense that was dink and dunk and can't run, won the Super Bowl with those fucking tackles. Like, they're going to be good this year. They're going to be like a good football team. They weren't a good football team last year. They just had 15 and 87.
Yeah. You know who their starting left tackle is?
Yes, I do. Kingsley Suamatia.
Kingsley Suamatia. Dieter's guy.
The sickos.
That's going to be interesting to watch. I am very because listen, rookie unpolished tackle week one. I am interested to see. I mean, that's the other thing. Their tackles were so bad last year.
Can't do any worse.
You know, Juwan Taylor worse. and former Donovan Smith. Yeah. Donovan. And they won the Super Bowl with them because you can hold in the Super Bowl too, which is something to think about. The 49ers, if they get back, that's a try. They need to go low. They need to just be grabbing because the Chiefs are smart. They went call it immediately or don't. And they didn't call it immediately. So they did it all game. And that's not me saying like, oh, they got it. Of course they got away with it. You get away with a lot in the postseason and you test the limits. And if they don't call it.
I'm with you, man. Listen, the 49ers like to think of themselves as the next iteration of the Legion of Boom. What the fuck did the Legion of Boom do for 5 years? I mean, they're incredible, by the way. Like, I know that 49ers fans don't want to hear this, but the Legion of Boom has really aged well.
Making fun of me. You're watching Legion of Boom tape.
I'm watching Legion of Boom tape. Well, I need to understand the cover three in its ultimate form. And I still have some questions on if it will work against 11 personnel in the modern era. But regardless, what did the Legion of Boom do besides have Richard Sherman, probably the greatest corner of the 21st century? They had the gall to just hold on the end, and just they held every play on defense, and they committed pass interference all the time, and they normalized it. They moved the Overton window of penalties, and that's what you got to do in the Super Bowl. That's a long way away from now. Green Bay Packers, Philadelphia Eagles, Sao Paulo, Brazil on Friday night on Peacock. Eagles are 3-point favorites. They opened as 2-point favorites. I'm all the way out on the Eagles.
Oh,
until
yeah.
proven otherwise.
Oh, yeah. I am. Listen, like, they
love
were
their
a
line.
Mess last year. Like, love, I know they brought in new coaches, but, like, I don't think that's going to be a sell for them. Jalen Hurts, like, he can make play make, but every single time he snapped the ball, he was rolling out. He never stands in the pocket and just plays quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty aggravating to watch. And I'm not saying he's not an incredibly talented player. I just like the Packers are, I think, a much more well-rounded team.
I'm fascinated to see this. You're interested in seeing Kingsley Suamatia. Me too, obviously. We're going to keep it in the trenches. Cam Jurgens replacing Jason Kelsey at center for the Eagles. That Eagles offensive line is godly. Maliata, Dickerson, Mekhi Becton at right guard now.
Oh,
and Lane Johnson
Becton at guard.
Yeah, and Lane Johnson at right tackle. Cam Jurgens has to hold it all together, though. You don't have a good center. I don't care how good everybody is on the bookends.
So, to be fair, I was very high on Cam Jurgens coming out, and if you're going to get to learn from Jason Kelsey, it's a pretty.
I like Cam Jurgens too. I think that this should be totally fine, but I'm going to be watching. He's going to have his hand on the ball every play, and I'm going to be watching offensive line play in that game. Also, I want to see if the Packers defense with Jeff Hautley, the former BC coach. Unbelievable coach. Like, legitimately.
Former 49ers secondary coach way back in 2019.
Unbelievable coach. I'm kind of petrified of the Packers because if Jordan Love is the guy, and I think that there is ample room for skepticism on Jordan Love. We're all just jumping to the end point. We just love anointing people. He played half a season in max protect, and now apparently he's, you know, the third coming of Favre and Rodgers. Okay.
Yeah.
He might be. He legitimately might be because he's got arm talent for days. He's got great coaching. They have awesome wide receivers that make a collective $9 million. The offensive line should be good enough. They got the running back. But, man, He might not be either. And the book is out on him. And man, I'm afraid of the Packers though. If the Jordan Love hype train is real, I'm very afraid of it.
I think
that defense is about to be so talented. It could be something really special.
Let's rip through a couple of these, especially the slop fest. Slop fest number 1 and 2, Panthers, Saints, and then Vikings and Giants.
Let's start with Panthers Saints. If you watch, we joke about the sickos and that energy and all that. Don't get me wrong. There are levels to this. And actively watching Saints Panthers in week one is certifiable. It's certifiable.
Unless you're into Taysom Hill or a guy from South Carolina who's got the best Xavier accent Leggett? Of all time. Yeah.
Are you entirely out? Are you entirely out on what's his name? Bryce Young?
I don't know what to make of Bryce Young because they were so bad and they put him under pressure so constantly last year. You just gotta give a guy a chance. I don't know what to make of him yet. We'll see.
What's the other slop fest? Vikings, Giants.
Vikings, Giants. Sam Darnold versus Danny Dimes. Listen, I'm not just laughing at. Oh, I'm laughing at Sam Darnold.
Who's the backup for Danny Dimes this year?
In my mind, it's still
Tyrod Taylor's the Jets backup.
Tyrod Taylor's on the Jets now. I don't know who their backup is. I feel like it's DeVito still.
Backup quarterback Drew Lock. How long does it take for Missouri legend Drew Lock to take over in New York? I give it 3 weeks.
Listen, the Giants defense is intriguing, but they've got a good defense. They've got Dexter Lawrence, Brian Burns, and Thibodeau on that defensive line. It's intriguing.
It's intriguing. The Vikings
not
are,
enough. For, yeah,
I'll say this: the Vikings
watch.
Are a well-coached team, right? Say what you will about Brian Flores, leader of men. But his defenses are multiple and interesting. It's kind of like Mike McDonald without the level of genius of a Mike McDonald. So there's something to be said there. I thought Minnesota punched above its weight on defense last year. And Kevin O'Connell's really, really good at the whole offensive coordinator thing. I'm not buying in on Sam Darnold. I wouldn't take him in fantasy or anything. But it's not as if they lack weapons. They got dudes.
He is not. Listen, I think Darnold has a chance to prove he can be okay in that situation. And listen, like that's the best spot for him to be in with that, like with that coaching, that offense, and just like this is your last chance. Let it rip. You're auditioning every year. You're never going to get a better situation than this to have one last go at it. Got a great chance. That's really interesting. So on those two games, I'm taking the Saints over the Panthers. I think the Saints are just like an adult football team.
Are they? Dennis Allen.
Defensively. Dennis Allen. I don't know. Players, their personnel.
Perhaps.
I'll take the Vikings over the Giants.
Wow. I don't want to touch either of those games. I'll say this. I'm not out on Buffalo, but I kind of like Arizona +6.5. I'll tell you what I really like in this game.
Ooh.
The over on 48.5. I think the Cardinals are going to put up some points. Now, it should be noted that everyone's out here saying that Marvin Harrison Jr., I think he's getting, I hate to go back to fantasy, but it is somewhat indicative of how we're talking and thinking about skill position players. He's getting drafted as like the wide receiver 9. Puka Nacua put up record numbers last year for wide receivers as a rookie. He was wide receiver number 7 last year. So, all you're saying is that Marvin Harrison is going to put up Puka Nacua-like numbers. That is the baseline of what you're expecting from him. I'm a little skeptical. I'm on the Dorchive. I think that Kyler Murray is healthy.
This is
the year after the year. I think that they've done enough on the offensive line. Obviously, James Conner is still very good. Jonathan Gannon's
rides an animal, too.
Totally. And you knew it because he was the best tight end in college football. And then he comes to the NFL, and guess what? He's a good tight end. And they're playing him the exact same way they played him at Colorado State, except now they have someone who can actually get him the ball. So fascinating stuff there. But the Cardinals are a team on the up. I don't know if Jonathan Gannon's a good coach or not, but I will say this. Every time I watched them last year, they played their asses off. They just didn't have much ass to give. And that defense, I don't think appreciably improved, but they're young. And in theory, given what we saw from the Eagles when Ganathan was the defensive coordinator there, they should be like organized and, you know, sound. They just might not be very good. So that just screams to me a team that's going to put up mad points, particularly late. And I'm still in on Buffalo. I don't think losing, I think they're going to run it more. I think that they'll be a more,
I worry about their defense a lot.
Yeah. Milano being out is tough.
But it's, listen, you still have Josh Allen. So see what you got. I don't know about what Keon Coleman can do.
I'm not buying in on Keon Coleman. I like Khalil Keon Shakir Coleman, but I haven't seen it.
Khalil Shakir is great. That's going to be a good one. That's going to, that could, ends. I'm with you. I think I like that over too.
I like the over 48.5. That could be a fun game. That could be a fun, interesting also, game. Yeah.
Also a fun game. Texans Colts. Well, it might.
No. Don't backtrack on that. Cause I'm with you 100%. It's a great game. The Colts were one first down away from keeping the Texans out of the playoffs. They played a playoff game effectively, those two teams. And obviously the Colts are going to want to get after it. They're going to want to prove something. I just don't know how much faith I can put in Anthony Richardson, given what I saw from him in the preseason.
Exactly where I'm at.
Like
people are really high. And again, I'm going to go on a very brief tangent here.
Do it. People
fetishize measurables for quarterbacks. Like Anthony Richardson was a bad college quarterback. I'm not saying I've seen him make some incredible throws. Like I've seen the upside. And people who are like great analysts, they do this thing with quarterbacks where they're like, if you don't have these measurables, like if you can't make these sick throws. And I'm like, you're actually basically, it's like the loop where like you're on this end of being, you know, it's the same as like a fan. It's the same as like a fan who's like, wow, sick throw. Like that's not actually great analysis.
No.
Like I'm not saying Anthony Richardson can't be it. I'm saying I don't know if he can just do the basic things that a quarterback can do, and maybe it'll take time, but he is coming off a very difficult injury. Mm-hmm. And listen, he relies on athleticism a lot, and I'm excited about his upside. I think it's there.
Well, it's there in spades.
Like he's got to learn how to really like actually play quarterback with anticipation. And he's made some sketchy throws as much as he's made some insane ones that no one else can make. Right. But that is a really interesting team. I also really quickly, I think people are a little too high on Adonai Mitchell because
he's going to start.
They still have, I'm still saying they have Michael Pittman, Josh Downs, Alec Pierce. Like I'm just saying they have a lot of wide receivers who can catch passes. So,
Mitchell's apparently, listen, I'm fairly plugged in with the Colts. Like Mitchell has been insane, apparently, in practice.
I mean, listen, it's a question of whether he'd be committed, right? Like he was insanely talented. He just took plays off.
Yeah. Let me, Richardson's scenario screams to me Josh Allen, right? Where you just say, wow, like all the traits that you could possibly want, cannon for an arm, can run over dudes, all this stuff. I think that people forget the Josh Allen career arc. They started him, and for the first 3 months of his rookie season, he was fucking awful. He was fucking awful to the point where you go, I don't think this is going to work. And then in the final month and a half of the season or so, he just started running. He couldn't see the field. He couldn't figure anything out. And so he just started running. And they started moving the ball a little bit. And it was like, hey, there's something here. There's something going on. And so the next year, they bring in Stephon Diggs, and now he has the safety blanket. And then he developed. All the credit in the world to Josh Allen. Clearly, he is what he is now in part of this process. But like, it was touch and go there for more than a minute. The same thing could be said with Anthony Richardson this year, where it's just not this immediate Cam Newton, everything clicks from the jump sort of a thing. It's not like CJ Stroud, even though they're very, it's almost apples and oranges as quarterbacks. Like it just doesn't click immediately. So I'm fascinated to see how it goes. I think fantasy-wise, again, to go back to that, because he has the running ability, he's going to be a cheat code.
Yep.
But in terms of winning football games and executing an offense, he might lose you as many games as he wins for you with that athletic upside. Now, that said, if it they have Shane Steichen as their head coach, he is an unbelievable offensive coordinator. And if he has this kid right with the players that they have around him, the defense is a little sus, but it's still the AFC South. I think that people are a little high on the Texans supply right now.
Yep.
They're fun as fuck.
For a good reason, to be fair. They're sick.
They're very fun to watch. They're sick. They were also a first down away last year. And CJ Stroud is a pocket quarterback who just rips it. Again, don't want to. CJ Stroud's Q rating is off the charts. It's awesome. I think that everyone just is very quick to anoint, just like with Jordan Love. They're very quick to anoint. They always want the next best thing. And progress is never linear. It's never as straightforward as Texans make the playoffs last year. Now they're going to be a Super Bowl contender. It's just, it ain't how it works.
Yeah.
And their schedule is brutal. And the teams that they beat last year were also brutal. They got away with some. Congratulations, you beat Gardner Minshew by, you know, the hair of your teeth. Like, now you actually have to go up against a first place schedule, a tough AFC South schedule. Like, I'm selling on the Texans. And that's not to say anything about DeMeco Ryans and the long-term possibilities for that operation. But, like, I don't think Bobby Slowick's the head coach at the end of the year. That's I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Okay. I have one prediction for you.
Great.
That is totally off the wall. One game that I think is going to be like a slop fest in the best way, because I'm interested in both of these teams, and I think which will have a kickoff return touchdown.
Wow.
Titans Bears.
Are you talking about our friend Richard Hightower?
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just saying, I think interesting game. I'm just going to predict. I didn't say for which team. Kickoff return, touchdown in Titans, Bears. Titans have a sneaky, kind of interesting roster. If like Will Very Levis, I'm not sold on him, but like they've got some stuff.
They're really good at a lot. I think Tony Pollard's going to bounce back. I think their offensive and defensive line,
on, man,
renovations. I'm buying Titans. And again, I don't like Will Levis at all, but like, if they get him just good enough, they got a shot not to make the playoffs. They got a shot to be the surprise team in the NFL this year.
Blake Bortles with a cannon. That's like, but
Blake Bortles went 13-3.
Terrible comp.
And you know what? I'm kind of in on the Bears as well. Hard Knocks has been soul crushing up until this past episode, which was actually kind of interesting and good. I kind of liked it. My concerns with Caleb Williams, the reason I wasn't a big Caleb Williams guy, is kind of what I was just saying with Richardson, right? Like, you have to actually run an offense. You have to play in structure. All of that talent, God-given ability to do stuff out of structure matters. It does. That takes you from good to great. But you don't get to good unless you can run the goddamn offense, right? It's not an offense, you just going out and doing that. Then you're Trey Lance. Trey Lance just went out and did stuff. You got to be able to run the plays as they're called, keep the chains moving. Simple is sometimes the best policy. My question with Caleb Williams was, can he do those sorts of things? I think that he probably will. I'm getting the impression, and maybe this is wish casting, but I'm getting the impression, talking to folks from where I grew up in Chicago and watching Hard Knocks and watching, I've watched every snap of the Bears this preseason, I'm getting the impression that Lincoln Riley's just not very good at this, or at least wasn't very good at this with Caleb Williams as his quarterback. And I know he won a Heisman Trophy, but Miller Moss the other day?
Miller Moss, man.
If he's in the sixth round, you take him. That's a great system quarterback. Yeah. I don't know what the living
fuck. I called him Cool Mac Jones.
That's a great. It's as good as you're going to do all year. You might as well buckle it up now.
I will. You want to move on to the rest of these games here?
No, I want to finish this Caleb Williams thought, and then we'll move on.
Oh, yeah. What,
think about what game you want to talk about next. I'm going to finish. If Williams could run the offense with Roma Dunze, who looks just sick, obviously you have DJ Moore. You're going to have a good running game. They have multiple good running backs. The offensive line is going to be good enough. It's going to be good enough. Ryan Poles doesn't put out bad offensive lines. He's a former offensive lineman. You know that there's a priority there. And that defense has a chance to be really, really special. And I think it's notable that Caleb Williams is really impressing in practices against a really, really good Bears defense. A chance to be the best defense in the NFL, frankly, with Eberflus calling the shots. I've known Eberflus for a long time. He's as good a DC as you're going to get in the league. Sweat, this Booker kid that we both kind of liked. I think he was out of Kansas. Going to give him a lot of rep. They picked him in the fifth
round. I think I criticized him because of the way he moves.
Yeah.
Like he's very too good. Tall. He's so tall and runs like he's got something. And
all he did was long armed. He was explaining this I watched Hard Knocks before we did this. And he was like, yeah, I only had one move. I just long armed. It's like, right. Well, yeah, you're long as fuck.
It works.
I'm in on the Bears. I'm in on the Titans. That would be a fun game to watch because maybe I won't feel that way after a game. I'm out on. Ultimately, the Bears season will end because Richard Hightower does something stupid.
Listen, most of these games are fairly interesting. Totally. Like even Commanders Bucks, like Terry McLaurin could. I have him in both my fantasy teams. I think he could have a sneaky good year. I'm just saying, like he's a very clear number one in offense that doesn't.
It's the number two Noah Brown who they picked up off of waivers.
Just saying, folks.
I'm kind of in on Austin Eckler bouncing back.
Yeah, that's a good like, oh, he's like washed, but dink and dunk balls up from a rookie QB. You gotta
The game runner. Just will keep plays. Like no one's expecting anything from the Commanders, so why not have Jaden Daniels just run a bunch too?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I've got him.
Cliff Kingsbury is the OC. You know, I think you'll be able to put up some points. So I don't think the Commanders will be good. I think they'll be interesting. In Tampa Bay, how do you feel about Tampa Bay? They're a playoff team.
They're kind of like Mike Evans. Well, no. That's a
high compliment. He just gets 1,000 yards every goddamn year. Sorry.
Let me rephrase. Mike Evans has this thing. Mike Evans has this thing where he's like the most boring 1,000-yard receiver. Which is not like, because when you watch Mike Evans play, it's entertaining, but you're not like, oh, let me go watch Mike Evans.
Right.
You know,
he's forgettable.
Right. He's just reliably going to put up 1,000 every single year. Mm-hmm. He's just going to do it. And the Bucks, I feel like, are a team that people are just like, I don't care. Right. That's what I mean is no one really cares about the Bucks, but they're probably going to be pretty competitive if Baker's anywhere near what he was last year. I don't necessarily think they have a lot they're going to accomplish.
Yeah.
But I think it's like a 9-8 team that's going to get frisky.
I feel like we just give Tampa Bay that benefit of the doubt. Dave Canales is gone. I'm not saying Dave Canales is very good, but he did make that work last year. Now, you know, maybe Bucky Irving actually gives them a run game. Maybe that offensive line is just ass outside of Wirfs. The defense, you know, they were still holding on to a bunch of those guys from the Super Bowl teams. Age comes for everybody, and I don't think they've done a very good job in replacing guys. I don't know if I think I'm out on the Bucks. I think I'm out on the Bucks. I think That's I'm out fair. On everybody in Graham the Barton. NFC. Who's that?
They did draft Graham Barton.
We do love ourselves a Duke boy, but I think I'm out on the Bucks. But the Commanders, come on, man. That's gonna be a sloppy game. A game that I'm actually interested to see, legitimately. Broncos Seahawks.
That's where I was going. That's the one I was going to mention. So, listen, and I'm not like high on the Bucks. I just think they're a team that can be frisky.
You give them the benefit of the doubt, and I think that's fair.
I'm just saying they're boring, and we're all going to turn our brains off for the Bucks. But they could. But I'm saying I could see them win 9 games. Broncos Seahawks. Seahawks are very interesting because, they have Mike McDonald coaching a defense that's kind of a mess. They lost to Chenna Nwosu.
Yep.
And they have a lot of question marks on defense. Linebacker, they don't seem to really know who their starting linebacker is. They just have a ton of question marks on defense. But it's like, can McDonald put it together enough with a totally new group from day one? Will that work? Will the offense be good enough? I don't know. Like Abe Lucas, their tackle, is still injured. He's permanently injured. It's just like, I don't know what to make of them. They could be intriguing. I see a scenario, and I'm not saying this. There's just a huge amount of variance for the Seahawks where I could see them finishing last in the division. Mm-hmm. I could see them competing for it. And that's not just to rip on them. I'm just saying there's a lot of unknowns. There's a lot of unprovens. And so I don't know. And then the Broncos, it's like, will the magic of Bo Nix work for them? Who knows?
I think it will. I really think that Bo Nix is... I don't know if I'm big on Bo Nix, but I think he's just perfect for a Sean Payton offense. And I think that it's just going to look like the Saints did with Sean Payton, where every year they were competitive and interesting. And it's going to be tough in that division, no doubt about it. But I think the Broncos are getting slept on big time. I think they're just going to be a wholly competent operation. Whereas Seattle, I think I'm with you 100% on the variance. I'll be even more specific as what I think is going to happen. I think about halfway through the season, it's going to click for Mike McDonald will figure out what makes that defense work. And they have the talent on that defensive roster to where they can run the same stuff that McDonald ran with the Ravens last
Witherspoon.
Year. I mean,
Witherspoon, man,
the dudes that they have in the secondary, the speed that they have at linebacker, like there's a shot to be so dynamic and so wild. And that's really what separated, obviously, of exceptionally talented Ravens defense. But what they did was, you know, they're playing 46 defense sometimes. They're going full bear front. You know, like they were doing stuff that no one else could prepare for. They're throwing blitzes from every which direction. They're chaos. They were chaos incarnate. And if you had a quarterback who could handle that, an offensive line that could handle that, you could burn them. The 49ers are not one of those teams. And you knew it going in that it was either going to be a boom or bust game, and it was a total bust. And that's just great coordination and great players coming together. Seahawks don't have those great players, but they're going to get that coordination. And so it might look pretty ugly in the early goings. Now, they have an exceptional running.
I think that game's going to be a mess. It's just going to be fun.
Right. And then about halfway through the season, I think it all comes together. And that Seattle defense is ferocious and someone that you do not want to play. So if I'm the 49ers, I'm really hoping that doesn't happen before week 6 on Thursday Night Football. I'm really hoping that that is something that happens later. And hope you get your lick in early, because I think they're going to be taking licks down the line. Also, I'm a big Smith and Jigba guy. I think as great as Tyler Lockett has been, I think Smith and Jigba takes over in that spot this year. And I think he kind of even takes it to another level. And I hate to say that about Lockett.
Yeah, and what is it, Ryan Grubb running their offense?
Ryan Grubb.
I have that right? Washington? Yep,
University of Washington. So. Nick Saban tried to get him at Alabama. He stuck around in Washington. Now he's getting that job. That is, I'm not worried about their coaching. I think that they're going to be very well coached. The question is, do they have the quarterback? The question is, do they have the personnel to play? How idealistic can McDonald be on defense versus how pragmatic does he have to be on defense with the personnel that they have? But they draft very well, and they're coming. They're coming. And I think that we'll start to see that that momentum build up. Any other games?
Yeah, so last few. We didn't mention Jaguars Dolphins. I think I'm not high on the Jaguars completely.
Do you think
but
Trevor
I
am Lawrence is good?
I don't really, but like he's talented. I think Brian Thomas is good, and I like him as a wide receiver.
You a Travis Etienne guy?
No, but yes, he produces.
Yeah.
If
Tampa Bay is forgettable, what are the Jaguars?
I don't know. I guess they should combine. It should swashbuckling.
Be like, it should be like when the Steelers and the Eagles got together during World War II.
Yeah, do Steagles. It. I think the Dolphins win that game. I would rather. Whatever. I just kind of want to move on from that game.
Yeah, I think it's a 3.5-point spread, which is kind of stunning. If the Dolphins are going to do, how about this? Let me ask you a question about the Dolphins. Is Devon Achan like awesome or just sort of a flash in the pan guy?
I think he's awesome, but it could be an Elijah Mitchell situation, right? Like he's just a guy that like
up the crown.
I'm just saying, like. Can he stay healthy for
fair
most of the year? If so, sure, great. I think he's produced too well to be just a flash in the pan. But you know, running backs, man,
sounds like you're going to use him in the slot a lot this year too.
I love it. Get the ball in his hands. Tunnel screens, baby. Those little ones that you throw in NCAA football where you have the tight end drop back and then everybody block inside. Do it.
Also, something to note in that game, if you're flipping around and you think to yourself, why would I continue to watch Jaguars and Dolphins? cheap motion was the story tactically of the NFL last year. Mike McDonald, week one. Here you go, cheap motion.
Mike McDaniel.
So, McDaniel, sorry.
there's McDaniel. Well, there's no longer
both,
McDaniel.
And they're both, but you're right. Thank you. Our favorite Mike, he's going to throw something out here. And I think I've already seen it with this this little tight end motion that they do.
Yeah,
with Jonnu Smith, I'm really interested to watch that from a tactical standpoint.
I just love Mike McDaniel, and he has you know, I'll love him forever. So
it's all stees. So all the time.
Steelers, last couple Falcons. Oh,
I can't believe it. Listen, there is something here that rings. There's a red alert. There's just a straight up red alert on this. Atlanta's a 3.5 point favorite at home. I know that home teams aren't. It's not 3 points anymore. It's really more like 2.25, right? Like, home field advantage isn't worth what it once was. But the Atlanta Falcons should be markedly better than the Steelers.
They should
on this line. And I'm starting to think that Kirk Cousins might not play in this game based on this line.
Ooh, what's the line at?
I mean, it's at 3.5. And I think it should be at 5.5 or 6, given what I saw from Pittsburgh's offense in the preseason.
I just think the Steelers like have this terrible habit of making it like a 3-point game, you know, just like grinding the game into a pulp. But I'm with you that does, like, Kirk Cousins elevating the Falcons. It's intriguing.
I mean, I think I like Michael Penix. I like that draft pick. I'm not trying to be contrarian. Like, when you have not had a quarterback for a while, you don't ignore the possibility of putting in two. You know, and
they should just run them both.
A11 offense. I think it's banned, but something to consider. And I think that they listen, Kirk Cousins is coming off an Achilles tear at 36 years old. And it was like halfway through the season. And, you know, I don't know how much whale sex he was listening to in order to heal himself. Unlike somebody who would have been ready 39 days after he tore his Achilles. That we'll see on Monday Night Football.
Which old Achilles man is going to have the better season?
That's a great question. Wow. My mind says Cousins, but my body won't allow me to say it with my chest.
I'm kind of with you. And listen, my heart still theoretically goes out to the Jets, but what's cool is that Rodgers is so annoying that I can't possibly feel any positivity towards them, and Robert Saleh evens it out, so it's just nothing, you know.
I would not be at all stunned if Michael Penix took the first snap in all the snaps in that game. There's something fishy about that line, and I'll investigate further.
It's intriguing. Cowboys, bad vibes. Browns. Bad vibes. Bad vibes. Bowl.
Cowboys, Browns.
Yeah. That feels like Cowboys to me. They love early season games, but also they love games that, you know, winning big when it doesn't matter. But also the Browns are tough, and that's in Cleveland, right?
It is in Cleveland. Tom Brady will be there. Not allowed to criticize officials, not allowed to just don't do it, Tom. Why are you doing this? No one's asked you to do this. Just don't.
He's not allowed to criticize officials.
Yeah, because he's technically a part owner of the Raiders. He has to be. He has to uphold the owner's rules on how to purport themselves in public, which is kind of difficult to do when you're calling a football game for a national audience. It's, you know, that'll be good. Jerome Ford, though, buy the Jerome Ford stock. Not sure you'd get anything for your Deshaun Watson stock, but I'd sell it. And you know what? Can you name the Cowboys' number two receiver?
Isn't it with Cooks? Isn't it Brandon Cooks? And then they've got Jalen Tolbert as their number three.
That is right. It is Brandon Cooks and Jalen Tolbert. Beyond that, they have some guy named Jalen Brooks. So they took Jalen Tolbert and Brandon Cooks, and they're like, "No, this one's different. We're not putting him in a different jersey. It's Jalen Brooks." And then someone named Ryan Fullerenoy? Where did he go to school?
Florinoy.
Oh, he's the one from Missouri State.
Yeah.
He wasn't good at Missouri State. We watched that
tape. Yeah, I said Cowboys, but I don't know. The Browns are a grinder, man. on the road, yeah. Cleveland, like
better coached.
Yeah. Oh, certainly that. Yeah. We'll see. I don't know. I just know the Cowboys like to win regular season games.
Can I just read you the Cowboys starting defense?
Sure.
DeMarcus Lawrence at left defensive end. 10 years in the league. Mazie Smith at nose tackle.
Oh, yeah. Michigan.
Yeah. Osa. Oh, man. I'm going to butcher the shit out of this one. I feel bad. Osa.
Odigizua. Osa Odigizua. I want to say he went to UCLA.
That's really good. I don't have that in front of me.
I like that he
Micah Parsons. Good player.
Yeah.
Do you know who Damone Clark is?
I've heard the name, but no.
He's their starting weak side linebacker. Eric Kendricks is going to be their starting Mike linebacker. That should go well.
And Maris Liufau, who went to, I want to say Notre Dame, who's kind of interesting.
Okay. We'll see. Third round pick.
It's Donovan not a good looking defense.
Malik Hooker. Kalen Carson is going to start at corner. Jordan Lewis and Trevon
it's
Diggs.
Not a good looking defense.
No, I'm going to take the Browns. I feel no confidence.
Yeah.
I don't think the Cowboys are going to make the playoffs, just reading that back to you. I think they're one injury away from this thing all collapsing. I mean, let me just they're going to start Tyler Garton at left tackle. I like Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma. Like, I liked him a lot. Starting him at left tackle. You're not the Chiefs, where you could just start Kingsley Suamatia and it's an upgrade. So you're starting Guyton at left tackle. Tyler right. Smith at left guard. Pretty good. Brock Hoffman at center.
Great.
Great. I mean, Cooper Beebe halfway through the year, I presume. Zach Martin still at right guard. Terrence Steele is your right tackle, ladies and gentlemen.
That's a poor name.
Yeah. And by the way, they're going to give Ezekiel Elliott 10 carries a game for, I don't know, nostalgia reasons.
That's awesome.
I'm out on the Cowboys. At least they have a kick-ass kicker. So they have a great kicker. Rams.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'll take the Browns.
Yeah, we're on the Browns. -2.5. That line's gone from 1 to 2.5 for good reason. Rams.
Last
Lions.
Two games.
What do you got?
Yeah, that's a ripper. That's a ripper.
That's a great game. And then Jets 49ers, which we'll break down in detail tomorrow, and post at some point
tomorrow, day after. Who knows? Who's to say? We will break it down this week.
I do. Let's get some comments in here. Niners legend Eric Kendricks. Never forget. By the way, there will be a point this season where you're like, God damn, they really should have kept Eric Kendricks. And that has nothing to do with how Eric Kendricks plays for the San Francisco or for the Dallas Cowboys.
People just call him Zeke Elliott an offensive lineman.
That's pretty good. For all the criticism, you guys ran down on the Niners brass. You guys need to reassess your positions now because the vibe in Santa Clara is through the roof. We said that. Tua seems like a really nice guy, but a lot of what he says is really cringe, really embarrassing things. He's been like that. There's a Hawaiian thing.
To be fair, it's sort of earnest, and I kind of think there's NFL QBs where you're either Josh Allen, where you're just a living football,
right?
Or you're just like, you're so like praised, you know? There's really only two ways to be successful.
I think the problem is that everybody has their antennas up for another Russ Wilson phony situation.
Exactly what I was
going to
say.
And I don't think that there's any... I think the term that you used is perfect. Like, he's earnest. Santa Clara Mari sounds delicious. They'll sell it to
Remember
you for
$92. Remember when there was that weird restaurant behind Levi's where the parking lot is? There's that weird, awful...
Oh, Dave's?
Yeah. Dave's? I'd never seen it open. There used to be the golf course over there, too.
I went to that restaurant one time. It had, like, funeral vibes. It was...
Yeah.
It looked like a church basement. It was... Yeah. I think it was called David's. The sign is still there. So when we park in that garage and you walk down the street, because, you know, heaven forbid we be anywhere close to the stadium, you can see the sign, and it has been blackened by the sun.
It's brutal.
Wild. I'm thinking about stealing it, but it's not even worthwhile. I want to go through. There's so many great comments. I mean, we were reading them. Here we go. Can we talk about Eagles players acting like Sao Paulo is the Gaza Strip and Philadelphia is Oslo? No. But by the way, awesome. There is a rule at the Sao Paulo Stadium that you can't wear green.
Right.
Because that's the Sao Paulo FC's rival Corinthians. They're green, so you can't wear green. And that's just so that people don't stab each other in parking lots and or stands.
Yeah. People like to talk about, you know, football fans and stuff being for real. Which soccer is bad. Ultras.
It's bad. It's bad. But Brazilian soccer ultras take it to a different level. So what are the Eagles wearing? Black helmets, black pants. Eagles are busting out an alternate uniform for this game and this game only so that they don't have green in that stadium as to, I don't know, doesn't really apply to them, but I guess that they're just trying not to go afoul of the football gods. Trying to find anything. You see anything that was worthwhile here? I mean,
no, man. I mean,
Dieter has the lug capacity of a sea manatee and the human mass of one. It's true. His lungs are probably massive.
No comment.
Not true. Actually untrue. In fact, I lost half of my lung capacity to asthma as a kid. I have scar tissue in a bunch of my lungs. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. Just wanted to share that for no good reason. But I've been doing a lot of cardio lately.
Anything else we want to get to?
No. Oh, let's talk about this real fast. Mustafa changed lockers last week after cuts. He didn't. There are still two gentlemen occupying. I think it's Hawkins and Mustafa. They both have
Jalen Mahoney.
Mahoney. And
I don't know if it's Mustafa, though. It might be someone else. I think Mustafa did change lockers.
Regardless, there are two folks that are in Trent Williams's place. And I talked to Trent about this. I thought this was the most important thing that we could get to the bottom of. And I said, Trent, you didn't negotiate for multiple lockers? And he goes, no, man. No, I guess I have to earn it. And I go, fuck that. You should have got it for free in the deal. You haven't signed it yet. You should go fix that. So we're going to find out if Trent has two lockers, if he went and fixed it contractually.
It said Williams and Silverback last year, and they're going to have to bring it back.
When I talk about the leadership of Trent Williams, we make it a bit of a punchline that he has two lockers. The fact of the matter is that no one had a problem with that. And I say that I was asking anyone to even give me the slightest word of, it's a little big time. And it's everyone's like, yeah, Trent gets two lockers. It's Trent Williams.
Yeah, he should.
So
right.
If everybody in that room, which can get a little cramped sometimes, it's not bad, but it's like, it can get a little cramped. You know, everyone wants their space. If everybody's like, that guy gets his own little wing, what does that say about that guy? It's not just on the field, that's in the locker room too, to the point where they give him a nice piece of real estate in the locker room.
I saw a clip. This is a good closing place and sort of a comparison.
Yeah.
When Brady was with the Bucks, Brady had two lockers. One was just so people could drop their stuff off for him to sign it.
Oh, really?
I'm saying for Trent Williams to be that version, not for people to sign it, but just have so much stuff and deserve a second locker room.
Yeah.
You know, to be a two, that's an echelon of player.
That's
a two locker player. Cause that's not just good. That is historically great and such a level of respect that you can't even be potentially criticized.
So like there's one other guy when I think two locker, like I bet Aaron Donald had two lockers.
Oh yeah.
Anyone else in the league you think two locker player?
It's a great question.
I think it's a high standard. And I think almost, we should think about it and bring it back up for the next episode.
I almost want to say Myles Garrett, but not quite. I'm not
too
quite
young.
There.
Too young.
Yeah. That's
Nick Bosa's not a two. I mean, listen, I think Garrett's a better player, but like he's closer to Nick Bosa than he is to Deacon fucking
Jones. You also have to just be like either a big guy or a quarterback.
Yeah. Who are the future Hall? I mean, Travis Kelce doesn't have one. Maybe Mahomes has one.
Yeah.
The double locker. Let's get to the bottom of this. We should have a comprehensive list by the end of the week. Two locker players. I'm going to start sending out messages.
Doing the most sincere reporting we've ever done.
On the most important subject we could possibly do it on.
Folks, before we go, we will be doing We'll be doing a season preview and a 49ers Jets little preview.
Yeah, a little X's and O's.
So we got that coming down the pike.
And then we'll go live. We'll go live after the game on Monday.
Very late. Very late.
Not good. Like bad.
Like perhaps like 2 a.m.
It could, You might wake up with us depending on what time zone you live in. And but we'll do that. And then at some point, Jake's going to leave for Japan. And so I'll have to find a new co-host.
I am leaving for Japan at the end of next week. But until then, we're going to be locked in. And I'll be locked in the second I get back. I might go live as I land for this, for the Patriots game, and just break it down live.
Please don't fucking do that. Okay. All
right. But we got stuff coming down the pike this week.
Yes, sir. All right. Adios.